You are now listening to Truth Crime, True Story Podcast Network on FetLife Radio and all your major platforms. Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple, iHeart. You don't want to miss the latest. Tune in and check us out. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of True Crime, True Story Podcast. Today, we have a wonderful guest that's going to educate the public on the public defender's office duties. And to me, it's a great honor to introduce her, Ms. Keisha Huxon. Welcome to the show. It's about time we got you on our podcast.
I'm thrilled to be here. I'm really, really thrilled and honored to have the opportunity to talk about criminal justice.
Yes, yes. You know, there's a whole lot of things going on in the world, an election coming up. But most of all, how did you get to the public defender's office?
Well, I'm going to take you all the way back to 1977. I'm a proud Jamaican, born and raised on the island of Jamaica. So I always have to shout out my Jamaicans at every opportunity, and immigrated when I was 15. I'm from an organizer background. That's what I did all through college. I organized in Chicago, working for city workers in Chicago to get a minimum wage increase, and then took my organizing skills and talents into law school. I graduated from Cornell Law School and began my career at the Defender Association of Philadelphia 22 years ago, and was a young public defender there. I then went in to do death penalty work at the Federal Defenders for the Eastern District of Philadelphia. And from there went to Montgomery County, where the Montgomery County Public Defender's Office. The opportunity to come back to the Defender Association was just one I could not pass up. To lead the organization where I began my public defense career is the most incredible honor of my life.
Wow. You know, for a lot of years, a lot of people in the community think that the public defender's office, there are a lot of people don't really know. All they know is a bunch of lawyers that defend people that don't have money to pay for attorneys. And right. I always tell people, I think that for me, some of the best lawyers that I've met came out of the public defender's office. As a matter of fact,
100% agree.
As a matter of fact, the lawyer that is responsible for bringing me home came from the public defender's office. So, what do you tell people that believe that they don't really know what the public defender's office do? What did the public need to know about the public defender's office?
Well, first of all, the Defender Association has been around since 1934. And when we took over a contract with the city to represent people in Philadelphia, we started very small. It was a small community defender organization. And today we represent 70% of the people who come into the criminal justice system, including children. We also represent children in dependency. So if a child has been removed from the home for investigation of abuse or neglect, we actually represent that child in the dependency system. Last year, we represented almost 45,000 adults and around 4,000 children in the city of Philadelphia. We are appointed and we represent clients from arraignment, which is the first appearance where they talk about bail and whether bail is going to be set, all the way through when a client is sentenced and if they do an appeal to the higher courts. We do a lot. We do a lot with a staff that is not where we need it to be. We need more lawyers. We need more social workers to do the work that we really need to do to get people out of the criminal justice pipeline as quickly as we can with minimum harm. And we are very, very proud of the work that we do in and outside of the courtroom.
Well, I am very proud of the work that y'all do because as a former juvenile lifer myself, it make me feel proud when I see some of my colleagues that I've done time with working in the office. It's unheard of for an office to represent a client and then turn around and give some of them clients jobs.
That's what we believe in. We are a second chance organization, but I will say what my friend Robert Rosa always says, is that we need to really reevaluate that word in second chance, because a lot of our clients did not have a first chance to begin with. My clients are from communities that have been disinvested in. Our clients are mostly Black and brown. They are suffering from generational poverty, generational trauma, systemic injustice. We have issues around drug and alcohol and mental health issues, lack of access to housing. And we are not addressing the issues that really bring people into the system. And so when our clients come back out and they get a second chance or a first chance, if we can, and when we can, we do hire them, and they are the best employees, because our young lawyers can look to someone and say, tell me what that was like. How can I relate to a client when I don't have the experience of being incarcerated? And we send them into the jails to talk to our clients and to work with our clients on cases. One of our best homicide investigators is a former juvenile lifer. And so they are part of the Philly Defenders, but they represent really who we are, that we've always been and always will be client-centered.
I mean, I think that it's important for the audience to understand that. And I always say this, that a lot of time people say, we're giving them a second chance, but we never had the first chance.
That's right.
And a lot of time when juvenile life has come home, a lot of people think, oh, they need clothes, they need jobs, they need this. But the most important thing that we need is what the public defender office is supporting. Wraparound services, a job, someone that we could call, someone that we could rely on and depend on. And y'all do that. I know a lot of people that if it wasn't for the public defender's office, they'd probably be back in jail.
We are the best lawyers, and I'll tell you why, right? We are the best lawyers for one reason that always, gives me pause, right? We're the best lawyers because we have so many clients, and our attorneys come in and they're in court every day, in family court and in the First Judicial District. Our attorneys are doing a high volume of cases and litigation. And we don't have our younger attorneys start with serious cases. It takes about 3 years before you do a jury trial at the Defenders Association, because we want to be able to train you in being client-centered, how to do zealous effective advocacy, and you start with the lowest level case. Now, for our clients, right, every case is important. But for us, I'm not going to put an attorney who's 1 month or 2 months or 3 months out of law school and say, here's your robbery. Or here's your homicide, right? Which is a practice in our counties in Pennsylvania. No, we're going to say, here's the retail theft. Here is this simple possession. Here's the paraphernalia case. And then we are going to make sure you have the resources after those 5 weeks of training, and we send you out into the courtroom, that you know what you are doing, but we are not going to give you a hard case to handle until we think you're ready to handle that case.
Do you think that the situation with juvenile lifers, we still have some people that are still incarcerated?
Yes.
So my question is, and the question that a lot of people want to know is, do you feel, as the chief public defender, that juvenile lifers should be on parole for the rest of their life, the way PA have it on parole?
I don't, right? That is just probation and parole in the city of Philadelphia is overutilized. And study after study after study shows that when you have that level of supervision, it really adds an even higher barrier for people to successfully reenter society. It's hard to find jobs. It's hard to maintain your employment. It's hard to find employment where you can save up enough to support a family or buy a house. And so I think that, everybody who's coming home after being a juvenile lifer, first of all, I don't think they should have been there in the first place, been sentenced to life as a child. But once you're home, you're home, right? There should not be any probation. There should not be any parole, certainly not until the rest of your life.
I mean, and I ask that question because people always ask me, why is you still on parole when neighboring states such as Michigan, Virginia, they got like a 3-year phase out.
Right.
And yet
right.
Here in PA, where we house more juvenile lifers than anywhere in the United States, we still on lifetime parole. Is this anything that's being done to eradicate life with juveniles from being on lifetime parole?
We, you know, it's one of the issues that, you know, we know that there's interest in. There's a lot of juvenile justice issues right now that are in Harrisburg. And, you know, we're keeping an eye on the different legislation that we hope to have our supporters in Harrisburg champion. That it's one of a long list of issues that I think PA needs to address. Are our draconian policies around probation and parole. And yeah, I'm happy to see that there was an argument on felony murder in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And I'm hopeful that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court will rule in favor of releasing people who are there serving long sentences for felony murder when they were not the ones who pulled the pulled the weapon or fired the firearm. And they're sitting in Pennsylvania prison for life. I think that I'm hoping the Pennsylvania Supreme Court does the right thing and, you know, outlaws and forbids that practice.
I mean, for those that's listening for the first time, can you explain to them what this felony murder is? Because a lot felony of time murder, people don't understand it.
Yeah. So a lot of our clients, a lot of people are in Pennsylvania's jails today, including youth who are sentenced to decades or life imprisonment for a murder that they took no part in, right? So one example I like to give is, you know, you are the one who, you know, you're talking to someone and perhaps you're thinking of committing a burglary or a robbery. And, you know, that's all you're thinking about, right? And so you go to commit that burglary and robbery, and your role in that burglary or robbery is, I'm going to sit in the car and I'm going to be the one to drive the car after, you know, my co-conspirator commits that burglary or robbery. But during the commission of that burglary and robbery, someone dies, and it's your co-conspirator, right, who may have done something to inflict serious bodily harm to the point where it's fatal. You are going to be charged with that murder, even if you were the one sitting in the car parked down the street and have no idea that things have escalated to the point where now someone is dead.
So there you got it, people. Y'all heard it. And this is a very important case, because if we win that case, how many people would come home on that case?
Hundreds. Hundreds of people would come home. It is one of the most overutilized statutes in Pennsylvania. It's something that we have been fighting for a very long time to eradicate this practice. It is a harmful practice. It really says that, you know, even if you don't have the intent, right, that you're still guilty of something that you had no intention of participating in. So I think, you know, if the Supreme Court rules, in our favor, we will see hundreds of people get a chance to come home.
So what are some of the cases that has changed the public perception on the public defender's office in recent years?
In recent years, I think, you know, the representation this office has done on juvenile lifers, you know, we are responsible for getting over 300 juvenile lifers back home under our representation. And I also point to something that I think is really important that people are starting to really think about, and it's resonating with them. Every single person who is coming home, who has been wrongfully convicted, right, they're innocent and they're sitting in a state prison. Everybody who has come home from being wrongfully convicted, not one of them was represented by a Philadelphia public defender.
Wow.
There is no one sitting on Pennsylvania's death row that was represented by a Philadelphia public defender. And it goes back to what I said, right? We start our attorneys with a robust 5-week training, and then they are supervised and have to go to follow-up trainings for about a 2 to 3 year period. And they don't get to do a jury trial until about 2.5 to 3 years in. So by the time a case gets up to a homicide unit, you were talking about the best lawyers in the country.
And I think that that's very important to know, because a lot of times people think, oh, they must have ended up on death row because they have bad representation. It must be the public defender's office. And that, you know, that used to be the perception when we was in prison. Like, we were scared of the public defender's office. Nobody wanted a lawyer from the public defender's office, because the perception was, if you got a lawyer from the public defender's office, they're going to sell you out.
Right. That is a perception. It's not just in Philadelphia, but it's the perception of the practice in general. And I always push back when I see media, whether it's television or an article, writes something about public defender offices not being as committed to the work or not being as trained. And I always bring it back down to resources. It's always resources. And by comparison, I'll tell you, my budget at the Philadelphia Defenders Association is $66 million a year. The police department's budget is close to $850 million per year, right? And we have never funded public defense the way that we need to fund it. And this is national, right? There's studies that show that public defense nationally should be funded at about $20 billion. And right now we're funding it at about $6 billion. So whenever I see a public defender being talked about in a way that criticizes their values or criticizes how committed they are to the work, I push back and say, you need to demand more of your local politicians, of your statewide politicians, to say, give those lawyers what they need to do their jobs, right? Give them access to training, give them access to lower caseloads and workloads so that they can do the best they can for their clients. And Pennsylvania just this past year is funding public defense, but it's $7.5 million. And by comparison, our neighboring states are $200 to $300 million in terms of what they allocate to public defense. So we have a long, long way to go in Pennsylvania.
So what can we do as citizens to encourage our legislators to support your office more?
I tell people one in three Americans have someone or know someone with contact with our juvenile or criminal justice system, one in three. And so people always really only understand the impact when they see a loved one come into the system. And it is so important that people pay attention locally, right? Who are we electing to city council? Who are we electing mayor? Who are we electing governor? Who's going to be the prosecutor, right? Because the judges, right? People do not pay any attention to judicial elections, but local politics really is critical to criminal justice reform. So I tell people, pay attention, right, to what is happening in our criminal justice system. And even better, walk into any courtroom at the CJC, the Criminal Justice Center, 3001 Filbert. Walk into any courtroom, sit and watch how justice operates in Philadelphia, and you will see how far we have to go.
And I will say this, people, that Pennsylvania is one of the few states that allow formerly incarcerated people to vote. How important it is for formerly incarcerated people to register to vote and actually vote.
It is so crucial. And I want to shout out my organization again. Just in the past week, we sat in a room and we stuffed about 4,000 envelopes. And we got those envelopes to the prison so that our client population there can register to vote and vote. And that's an initiative we've done before, and we're really proud of that initiative because we want our clients to know that their voices matter. And so they have to go out and vote because these issues not only impact them and their families, but also their communities. I tell folks all the time, be invested in criminal justice issues, because outside of a homicide or a really serious violent crime, our clients are coming back home. And so what's happening to them when they get into the system? What's going on in our jails? What's going on in state prisons? Do they have opportunities for education? Do they have opportunities for workforce development? What's reentry look like? Because our clients are coming back to their communities, and they're coming back to our communities more traumatized than when they left.
For me, what I find more attractive about the public defender office is the way in recent years, the way y'all been connecting with the community and making people feel like we are part of the office. There was a time when people didn't feel that connection with the public defender's office. Now it feels like those are my people. They look like me. They represent people like me.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to give a nod to my predecessor, Keir Bradford Gray. That was something that was really important, right, to make sure that we're out in the community. We've expanded on that under my in my tenure. And just by example, last year, we were at over 350 community events, right, where we were doing either tabling to educate people about the work that we do, expungements. And we make that a priority because we really want to help shift the perception of what people think about the public defender's office. And it's working. So we walk into rooms now and people say, oh, yes, I saw you at such and such rally or such and such community event, or you helped my brother get an expungement. And the more we do that, the more we educate our community members about who we are and why we're important and why they need to be invested in us, the more attention we draw to criminal justice issues and the more we convince people that they need to care, about the issues in their community, and that criminal justice issues, in my opinion, is the next civil rights movement. But it's not one where people are going to put up blockades and protest and rally in the streets, right? We saw that a little bit after George Floyd when people started to pay attention. But now the pendulum is shifting again, and this is what happens throughout the course of American history. We make progress, usually following a devastating event like the death of George Floyd, and then we have a couple years of progress, we get some good things done, and then the pendulum starts to shift again. And it's happening right now. So I want people in the community to know who we are and why they need to care about these issues.
You know, as you know, as a formerly incarcerated person, it's very important for me to reach out to the youth, to the young people in my community. And when I see you and your attorneys out in the community, it makes me feel good because never before have I seen so many young people that aspire to be lawyers. And I work at a school, and a lot of them want to be social workers. A lot of them want to be psychology majors, criminal justice major. You know, what is the process for some of these students, and such as the students in community college, to get involved in your office?
So I'm very proud that we have someone in our office who is the director of youth partnerships and our community outreach. His name is Guy Lang. He is fantastic. He came up with this idea to have a junior defender program where we have our attorneys, social workers, investigators go into schools and do a 6-week curriculum on the juvenile justice system and the school to prison pipeline. And we are in 4 Philadelphia public schools. Those public schools are located in some of the most disinvested areas in the community. And we do that 6-week course, but then we run a junior defender summer program where they get a very good stipend to work with us for 6 weeks throughout the summer. We have a lot of students that come in from from Cheney, from Lincoln, that work with us in our undergraduate summer program. And so I tell people, we have undergraduate programs. If you want to intern here, just go to our website at phillydefenders.org and apply to be part of our summer program. If you're interested in social work, we have social work interns. We have so many opportunities. You do not need to be in law school to see what we do. And I also tell people, I love when people come and chat with me, right? Just spend an hour or two with me, or come and sit with me in a courtroom. Give that hour or two where you're going to get so much education about what's happening and whether this is a career path for you.
I mean, at some point, I would love to connect you or even invite you to come to community college and just talk to my students.
As you know,
The Iron Mall program is a program that serves justice impact students. Everybody in my program has served some type of time in some capacity. Some of them are the relatives of people that have served time. And to me, to see them, hear you speak, is an inspiration, because a lot of time we don't see people that look like us in these positions. And that's what's inspiring about your role as Chief Public Defender, that you are reachable. You stop and talk to anyone that's interested in knowing about the office. What is that possibility that we invite you up here so you could come talk to them and maybe encourage them? We have a lot of criminal justice major, and I think that if they see you in person, they would want to be lawyers or maybe intern, because we do have an internship program.
We have a very substantial portion of our staff are actually CCP graduates. And we work, we're working very closely to try to be in every space, community college space, and different universities here in the region. So I would love to come out and talk to your students. I would love the opportunity for them to ask me questions and to hear about the day-to-day work and to encourage them, right, that there are opportunities to intern with our organization in the summer months and throughout the year.
Yeah, I would love some of my students to take part of your 6-week program, or even invite the office to come in here and conduct a 6-week program for us. We have the space.
I will talk to Guy. He is a wonderful, wonderful part of our staff, and just the connections that he has to our youth, to our different community members. We have the program in Philadelphia schools now, but I could talk to him about even doing a shortened curriculum for your students at CCP. Would love to have that conversation with him.
So let me ask you this. Are you planning to retire as chief public defender, or are we seeing the next city judge? I don't know. You tell us.
Yes, I'm a public defender for life. I've been doing this for 22 years. I tell people that I don't have any political aspirations. I do not intend to run for judge because I cannot put people in jail. I don't intend to run for any sort of political political title or role. This is what I'll do. And I won't be chief defender for life, but when I eventually step down from that role, I'm hoping I can take some cases and continue to work in the organization or represent clients in other direct service ways. But this is my career. This is what I left law school to do. I've made an impact, and I can't think of any other way to practice my art of legal advocacy.
So, we're not seeing the next judge.
I'm a public defender.
Good.
That's who I am. It's an identity. You talk to public defenders, it's an identity, right?
Absolutely.
We believe in work, and we make sacrifices to come into the work. We're not going to build generational wealth. The work is emotional. It can be very traumatic, right? There's a high burnout rate in our occupation because the work is so demanding. And we're working with people who are going through the worst times of their lives. And to be able to sit next to someone at that moment is incredible dedication, and grateful to have worked with some of the most incredible people throughout my 22-year career.
So the last two public defenders, which is Kier and you, has been women. Is that a tradition that we're going to continue following a scene?
I hope so. I mean, I think it's important in the largest black city in America for someone to look like me and Kier lead an organization of 540 people, right? It's a significant organization. You represent 70% of the people who come into the system. But I say anyone who takes on the role of chief defender doesn't have to look like me. It doesn't have to be a woman, doesn't have to be a woman of color, but it has to be someone who is going to carry the organization forward and make sure that we are increasing resources, make sure we remain client-centered, community-oriented, and that we're pursuing justice in and out of the courtroom. We need someone to continue that tradition and continue to do the work that we need to do on behalf of Philadelphians.
But to build that trust, and one of the biggest black cities in the country, which is Philadelphia, do you think the people need to see someone that look like them, that represent them?
I absolutely do. And I'll say right now, our attorneys are making $64,000 a year when they leave law school. The district attorneys and the prosecutors started at $70,000. There are people who come in and go to the law department. They start at $72,000. So we are the lowest paid when you look at who the other criminal justice stakeholders are. And we are still at a point in American history, which is why the U.S. Supreme Court's affirmative action ruling worries me, where a lot of the African Americans, men and women, that I'm trying to convince to be a public defenders, the salary is just too low, right? They're their first in their family to go to college. They're their first in their family to go to law school. We are still at a point in American history where we are not at a second or third or fourth generation lawyer. And so it's really hard at that salary point for me to convince people to come into our office. We are a very diverse organization, and I'm proud that 75% of our fall 2024 class is from has some diversity in terms of race or gender or sexual orientation, and that's important. But if I'm to recruit a diverse group of defenders, attorneys and non-attorneys, I need to also retain them. And make sure that they stay and do the work and hopefully stay to lead the organization forward. But I'm very proud of the work that we've done in that area. But retention is key. And we just don't simply make enough for it to be a sustainable financial career for people who look like me.
So what's the average stay for a public defender at the office?
2020 was a very challenging, and 2021 is a challenging time, not just for our organization, but public defender offices around the country. And in 2020 and 2021, We lost 98 defenders, right? Attorneys and non-attorneys. And that was a significant loss. And the people that we lost during those 2 years were people that were very experienced, who had been in the organization 10 to 15 years. So when I came on in November of 2021, we started to do something we've never done in the 90-year history of the organization. We actually started to hire what we call laterals, right? We started to hire people who did not come up through the organization and didn't start their career in the organization. And so we were recruiting from other counties. We've been recruiting from other states to really build up back that huge loss that we had in that 2 year period. And we're finally there. In the last 2 years, we've had people retire who've been there for 50 years, 40, 30, right? People traditionally have come to this organization and they have committed their career to this organization. And COVID did, COVID had a huge impact. But I'm hoping that we're going to get back to that tradition where people come and stay and do the work. Salary is important. My ability to get workload and caseloads down is important in that effort. I've brought on a lot of initiatives to make sure that people know they can advance into leadership roles, so that they don't have to be in an organization 20 years before they get the opportunity to lead a unit or to be in management, and a lot of other initiatives and benefits. That are really, really important, that I think is key to retention. But we need support, we need continuous funding, we need a real investment in public defense. I want to thank City Council Member Kenyatta Johnson for his staunch advocacy of the organization and many other City Council members, Jamie Gauthier, Kendra Brooks, Nicole Rourke, Wu Landau, Curtis Jones. They've all been tremendously, tremendously supportive of the organization in budget season, and I hope they continue to do so.
I mean, recently we've seen one of the best, I think, attorneys come out of your office retire, Bradley Bridge.
Yes, 40 years of service.
What do he mean to the public defender office, and how should his career be looked on by young attorneys?
Brad was one of the a part of the team, a key part of the team that represented the juvenile lifers. As I said before, he's been with the organization for 40 years. He actually still volunteers 1 to 2 days a week. He can't really completely walk away from the work yet because he is that committed to it. And I'm glad that we have him still on board, even for only a day or two. But the mark that he has left on this organization and many other defenders who recently retired. They are legal experts. They have changed the law in Pennsylvania. They have really developed and carried on a tradition of excellent advocacy, especially in our homicide unit, and in our other major felony trial units. And they are missed, but there's a whole group of people come in behind them, right? We have young Bright Bridges. We have young, people who are the first or second or third year of practice who we already see are going to be the ones that are going to really help bring about change and reform here in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia.
In closing, what should the public know about Kia Hudson and her role?
About my particular focus, I'm really trying to do everything I can to increase the visibility of our organization, which is why community involvement is so important, to make sure that I'm continually bringing resources into the organization so we can continue to do our best work. We are proud of several initiatives to build up our immigration practice, to make sure that we're taking on more cases in juvenile court, especially serious cases where juveniles are involved. The child dependency unit, making an investment in the dependency system, because Philadelphia leads the nation in the number of Black and Brown children who are removed from their homes and placed in foster care. That is a statistic that absolutely contributes to the womb to prison pipeline, as we call it. And so, as I recently said to a reporter, if I were queen for a day, our attorneys would make a good salary where they can support their families. Caseloads would be lower, workload would be more manageable because we have investments from the city in technology. And I would be able to retain and train the next generations of Brad Bridges for the organization.
And where can people contact you or know more about the Public Defender's Office?
They can go to phillydefenders.org. Our website is full of really great information and also talks about the different issues that we've worked on in the past few years. They can also find information about their case. If they have a case in the system, it's very easy for them to see where in the system their case is. We are also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, right? So we're trying to be cool. We're trying to keep up with the young folks, but also we realize social media is where so many people get their information that we also have, you know, we have to have a presence there as well. So that's where they can go and find information about who we are, what we do, and how to become involved.
Ms. Keisha, thank you for your time. I understand how busy you are. You don't know how much this means to us. We've been trying to get you on the podcast forever, but you're busy.
I'm glad I'm finally here, and I'm really honored for the opportunity.
Listen, the work needs to be done, so we know you're busy. We know you travel the city. You go to all the events. I just want you to know the True Crime, True Story Network is here for you. It's here for the office. Like I told you when I saw you in person Thursday, if you want an hour, you got an hour. You know, seriously. I think that your voice...
I will absolutely take advantage of that. Would love to come back. And, you know, there's so much to talk about. Right? Yes. There's so many issues that we could spend an entire
hour
or day talking about. So we'll absolutely take you up on that opportunity. And it was really great to get this platform to talk about our work.
Absolutely. We're here to make sure that the public know that the public... Defender's office is not an office of enemies. It's an office that's here to help our loved ones. Have bought over 300 juvenile lifers home. They are responsible for that. In fact, I'm going to go out and say it. Bradley Bridge is one of the champions. They fought for juvenile lifers to come home. And I'm going to say that because I was there. I was in the mix of that in Gratis for I'm a beneficiary of the Public Defender's Office. My attorney came from the Public Defender's Office, David Shanti. Shout out to him. The best lawyer walked me out of court. So I just want to say to you, Ms. Keisha, thank you for all that you do for our community. Thank you for honesty
so
in the law, and thank you for protecting our children. And if you heard it here first, people, y'all know it's official. You're listening to Truth Crime, Two Stories on all your major platforms. Tune in every week to Truth Crime, Two Story Network. And check out the latest news. Thank you.